Good to have you all here this morning. My message this morning is entitled, Actions Speak Louder. So you've probably heard the saying that children learn more from what we do than from what we say. Well, if they were to learn from what we say, life for them and for us would probably be a little bit easier. We could just tell them to be nice all the time, and they'd be nice all the time. And unfortunately, both for us and them, as any parent or a teacher can tell you, it really just doesn't quite work that way. You see, it turns out that most social creatures, which includes humans, most social creatures learn through imitation. And truthfully, imitation is an exceptional process. It's an exceptional process for learning. It requires no words, no punishments, no explanations. Children learn more than we might ever imagine simply by imitating us. They learn how to sit, how to walk, how to talk, how to sing, simply by imitating us. More times than not, they even end up with our accents and our gestures and our postures. That may seem like a pretty great thing. I mean, if we can't just tell them what to do and expect it to happen, at least we can model the appropriate behavior. The thing is, if we want our children to grow up acting morally, well, we can't be hypocrites. We have to act morally too. Now, I have no doubt that most of us believe that we tend to act morally. And if we are parents, we also have struggled to try to explain our own children's behavior. Well, while it is true that kids are influenced by their peers as well as their parents, we do need to recognize that even with the best intentions, even as the daily actions of our lives teach some fairly excellent moral rules, our own disciplinary methods might possibly violate those rules. And if they do, we're teaching our children to violate them too. And that's just one of the ways. That's just one of the ways we could be teaching our kids that it is okay to violate certain moral rules. You see, increasingly, parenting experts are telling us that when we spank our kids for hitting others, we're teaching them that it's acceptable to hit. And if you think about it, we actually sort of do the same things with people that we label as bullies. We degrade them by calling them bullies. We campaign against them. We intimidate them. We humiliate them. We even socially isolate them and push them aside. It is excessively difficult to teach kids that it's wrong to bully people when we are bullying those people that we call bullies. Now, this is not a message about how to raise children. I was just sort of using that as an example of how important our actions are, how loudly they speak, and frequently more loudly than our words. We humans, being the social creatures that we are, we humans learn much more from other people's actions than we do from their words. So we must learn to practice what we preach. And the reality is, our actions not only have a strong influence on other people, but they also have a very strong influence on ourselves, particularly emotionally. In the summer of 1971, a team of researchers at Stanford University divided a group of undergraduates randomly into two different groups. And one group were to play the role of the prisoners, and the other group was to play the role of the prison guards. And they acted out their respective roles each day in a pretend prison that had been set up in the basement of the Stanford Psychology Building. Well, within days, the guards guards started displaying authoritarian attitudes. They even intentionally humiliated some of the, quote, prisoners. And not only that, the prisoners started developing passive attitudes, some of them even sinking deep into depression. They had to stop the experiment after only 6 days. 6 days. That Stanford prison experiment is actually frequently used to illustrate the power of our social rules in shaping our behavior. But it also shows the power of our behavior in shaping and influencing our emotions. It turns out that on its most basic level, the saying, fake it till you make it, is actually true. For years and years, self-help gurus have taught the same simple mantra. If you want to improve your life, then you need to change the way you think. Force yourself to have positive thoughts and you'll become happier. Visualize your dream self and you will be increased with success. Think like a millionaire and you will magically grow rich. Now, in principle, that idea sounds perfectly reasonable. However, in practice, it frequently proves to be ineffective. Take visualization. Hundreds of self-improvement books encourage readers to close their eyes and imagine their perfect selves. To see themselves in a huge office at the top of a corporate ladder or sipping on cocktails as they feel the warm Caribbean sand between their toes. Unfortunately, research suggests that technique does not work. In one study at the University of California, students were asked to spend a few moments each day visualizing themselves getting a high grade in an upcoming exam. Even though the sort of daydreaming exercise only lasted a few minutes each day, it caused the students to study less and obtain lower marks. In another experiment at New York University, graduates were asked to note down how often they fantasized about getting their dream job after graduating. The students who reported that they frequently fantasized about such success received fewer job offers and ended up with significantly smaller salaries. So what gives? Could the self-help gurus actually be wrong? Honestly, who knows? Who knows? But maybe it's that those who fantasize about a wonderful life are ill-prepared for setbacks. Or maybe it's that they become reluctant to put in the effort required to achieve their goal. But either way, the message is clear. Imagining the perfect you doesn't really work out for most people quite the way that the gurus would have you believe. However, decades of research actually have shown that there is, indeed, a simple, but very effective way to change how you think and feel. And the technique seems a little bit counterintuitive, but it's grounded in some pretty good science and research. Oddly, the story actually begins with the brother of novelist Henry James. It turns out that William James was a world-renowned Victorian thinker. His two-volume set entitled The Principles of Psychology is frequently required reading for behavioral studies students. Well, sometime around 1880, while he was working at Harvard, James put forth the theory that smiling can make you feel happy, and frowning can make you feel sad. Or as he used to say, his favorite way of putting it, you do not run from a bear because you are afraid of it, but rather you are afraid of it because you run from it. Now, at the time, his theory was thought to be like way too far ahead of its time to be of any good use, and it was basically forgotten about until sometime in the 1970s, 1880 to 1970, when a psychiatrist named James Lard from Clark University decided to put James' theory to the test. Volunteers were invited to the laboratory, and they were asked to adopt certain facial expressions. The results were, well, they were pretty remarkable. Exactly as James had predicted, the participants felt significantly happier when they forced their faces to smile, and much angrier when they clenched their teeth. Fake it till you make it. Now, over time, other students have continued on this research, extending it into other things like willpower and confidence, how old you feel, and so forth. And in each case, it turns out that actions can actually directly impact your life outlook. So, if you want to be happy, just try smiling for a while. If you need more willpower, force yourself to tense up just a little bit. If you want to be more confident, assume a power pose. And in each case, your brain will ultimately follow suit with your actions. So, do actions truly speak louder than words? I'd say it really depends on what the expected or desired outcome is. But I'd also say that all too frequently, we undervalue the depth of the impact that our actions have on other people and on ourselves. The reality is, or that reality, can actually have a really large impact on spirituality. Having a healthy spiritual life is, well, a lifetime pursuit. Getting a firm grasp on spirituality can be especially difficult at times. We can even find ourselves struggling with spiritual concepts that we once thought that we had under control. It may be that one of the ways that we can help ourselves not lose our grip on a particular spiritual insight is to find an action that we relate to that insight and then put it into practice as frequently as possible, particularly when we feel like the insight may be slipping away. And not only that, but it would seem that actions can help us learn spiritual perspectives that we might be having a hard time grasping. Look to someone who you believe has a grasp on that perspective, and look at the actions in their lives that you believe stem from those perspectives. Then, put those actions into play in your own life. Fake it till you make it. And finally, it's deeply important to put actions behind your spirituality. A belief not backed by actions is little more than a wish or a hope. Putting actions behind belief not only reinforces it in you, but it can help others along spiritually more than we tend to imagine. As a matter of fact, one of the largest causes of decline in the Christian church today is that people increasingly see them as hypocritical. Their actions don't match their words. They come to a place that teaches love thy neighbor and experience infighting and cliques and people gossiping. They hear people in churches say on Sunday, when you do it unto one of the least of these, so too you do it unto me. And then the rest of the week they support politicians and policies that step on the backs of the least of these. Sometimes actions truly do speak louder than words. And not infrequently, that's truer than we really understand. This is your opportunity to respond to the message or to any of the themes today. Are there those of you who have thoughts you want to share with the rest of your spiritual community?
I thank you for your message, Mark, and I must say I'm a little upset because the trunk of my car is full of my latest self-published book called Think and Grow Rich.
Good luck with that. Are there any others?
If not, that just leaves us. Yeah, go right ahead. She's going to bring you a microphone so everybody can hear you.
As I was listening to your commentary in your sermon this morning, I thought about my grandmother who famously used to say to me, and I didn't quite understand. She said, Lorenzo, my government name's Lorenzo, and she called me Lorenzo. She said, Lorenzo, honey, people vote with their feet. And I thought about that little bit. Grandma, she didn't get out there. Let me think about this one a little bit. But she's right. I have to take consideration. She was trying to tell me that.
She knew it was true a long time ago.
This is what people say, that people vote
with their feet.
With their feet.
Yeah, see what they do.
And we have a moment in which we have a lot of not voting with the feet.
Oh, yeah.
Martin King said we, at times, in the 68, he said we have a high blood pressure of creeds, but an anemia of deeds. And if there's one thing that I would love to see us in this moment. It's like an American. Americans used to be the people that, when you wanted something done, from the colonial period forward, everybody said, those Yanks, get those Yanks. Those Yanks will do it. We want to do this. Well, we don't know how to do it. Well, get those Yanks. Those Yanks will do it. And we've gotten into 1970s and 80s, and all over the globe, it seems like we can't do anything. The great challenges of the day are scientific and technological, and we have the technology, and we have the science, and we literally refuse. There's a militant ignorance.
Yeah.
Noam Chomsky calls it intentional ignorance in the culture at the moment.
Yeah.
So I pray that we get past this,
got to.
This American adolescence and unwillingness to do. We used to do. All over, as a young Marine, I traveled all over the place. People say, oh, you Yanks, you are number one. Number one. Now I'm too afraid to go.
I hear you.
We don't do anything. Afraid.
Yeah, that's true. All right, if there are no others, I'll turn it back over to you, and we'll get to hear some more great music. Thank y'all.
Okay, I think I did most of the announcements earlier. I do want to remind you all that there is what we call the basket in the back for contributions to the church. And as I've been more involved in the church, when you support this church, you're not only supporting the church part, but you're supporting After Gateway, and you're supporting artists and musicians and all kinds of people who rent from us, because part of our philosophy is to subsidize and make the building available to people who are creating and making a better Greensboro for all of us, a better community. So you're not just turning the lights on for the minister and for this service. You are turning the lights on for a lot of people when you support the church. And the basket is in the back. And with that, are there any other announcements? Yes.
Speaking of supporting community in this church, I'm looking around. I don't see that many people who were here Wednesday night who participated in the chair tap, the inclusive dancing. But, yes, Mark did. And it was a whole lot of fun. And the instructor, Mindy, would be able to do that on Wednesdays before the supper. And also she has some slots available on Thursday mornings at 11:30. So that didn't get into the bulletin, but anybody who's interested, please see me at fellowship. Thank you.
Well, with that, Mara.
There's been a global call for meditating this evening for Syria, and our feet have to move, but also our hearts have to open and expand and include other parts of the world. With the science proving that we're one unified field, no matter where we are, we can support others, our brothers and sisters. So if you think about it tonight, you want to just sit quietly. It's 9:57 is when the all call is, to open our hearts. And I think if maybe we could just send a wave of love to Syria and maybe do some healing that way.